This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Young, in for Tiziana Deering. Well, it's no secret we are in a tough housing market. Home prices and rents have surged to record highs in 2021, according to a new housing report out of Harvard. Like me, you probably know someone or have had your own frustrating experience trying to buy or rent a home at an affordable price, especially. The report on the state of housing in the country puts real numbers behind that feeling, estimating that in order to own a home in the greater Boston area, you need to make at least $181,000 a year. Now, to put some perspective on that, that's double the median household income in the region. So, is there any hope for future home buyers? Here to weigh in on that and tell us more about the report is Managing Director of the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies, Chris Herbert. Chris, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Okay, so 2021 was a record-breaking year with surges in both home prices and rents. So can you tell us what you found in this report and then help us understand why we're seeing what we're seeing?
Well, I think you've done a great job describing what we've seen is that over the last 2 years during the pandemic, after an initial pause in the economy, people realized that home was ever more important. People still had a fair amount of money in their pocket, and they rushed out to get a bigger place to live. And that led to rapidly rising home prices that pushed housing prices up by double digits for 2 years in a row. And for a while, the Fed's policy of cutting interest rates helped offset that to some degree. But just since December, we've seen interest rates go from 3% to 5% of the time we went to press, and now 6.5%. And so we had, you know, the start of the pandemic, you needed $125,000 to buy a house in Boston. It was $181,000 at press time. It's $205,000 today. So with that rapid flood of people coming into the market, which was really characterized by not enough housing to go around, led to that real surge in prices.
Yeah, well, so can we talk about the greater Boston area specifically? How do some of the national trends you found hold true for greater Boston, and are there any areas where they differ?
You know, for the most part, the trends we're seeing is kind of unusual in how widespread they are across the country. You know, typically you might see a different trend in, say, Phoenix than you would in Buffalo. But what we found during the pandemic was that increase in desire for homes, that tight supply, kind of met and pushed up house prices. Now, they're not going up as fast in Buffalo as they are in Phoenix. And in Boston, they went up about 15% last year, whereas in other places, they were 20, 25, 30%. But I think what's different about Boston is that we started with very high house prices to begin with. And so what was already an unaffordable housing market has become just that much more unaffordable. So while the trends are similar and the direction of the forces are similar, the result is just Boston is really at the upper echelon of markets in the country where it's really hard to be able to afford both a home to buy and an apartment to rent.
So we've talked about the pandemic a couple of times now in this conversation. How much of an anomaly is that market force? Are we going to see that again? Is this the shape of things to come?
You know, there are certain aspects of what happened during the pandemic were bringing out underlying factors already. So one of those is the fact that we have the large millennial generation, which has been delaying entry into home ownership. We knew that someday they would buy. And what happened with the pandemic was that signal was everybody come out now because of the fact that you needed to work from home and the like. And so what we're seeing is a demographic wave that's pushing up that demand. We're also seeing a long-term shortage of supply. We just have not been building very much housing since the housing crash. So those were long-term forces that were there. When you added in then the kind of extra buying power from the fact that people weren't taking trips, their student loan payments were suspended, they were getting stimulus payments, and interest rates that were under 3%, that was kind of a volatile cocktail for housing prices.
That's a very good point. So I read through the report this morning, and I noticed that it does confirm what we know to be true about housing disparities along racial lines. Can you dive into some of that data with us, especially what we're seeing in the Boston area?
Sure. You know, I like to say that if you owned your home over the last 2 years, you basically had a winning lottery ticket. Just in the Massachusetts area alone, the typical homeowner saw their value of their home go up by $54,000. That's $54,000 more in your pocket than you had a year ago. Now, the disparities we see in opportunities to own a home by race in the Massachusetts and the Boston area are pretty stark. So while whites own homes at a 70% rate, people of color own homes at half that rate, at 35%. So what that means is that lottery ticket was cashed a lot more by white folks than it was by people of color, widening those disparities in terms of standing wealth today, but also who's able to buy a home tomorrow. Because if you look at the down payment that people need and the closing costs they need, a lot of times parents and family members are the ones that help people get over that hump. If your parents don't own a home, they can't make that opportunity for you, which is too true for people of color.
Well, and I think that is a great point to make a segue. I want to invite another guest into our conversation, Rachel Heller, who is the CEO of Citizens Housing and Planning Association, or CHAPA. Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you're familiar with this report and Chris's work at the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard. So what are your reactions to all of these findings?
It's kind of like you said at the beginning, this report puts data to the pain that people are feeling. We all feel it right now. Home prices and rents are rising just faster than incomes are, and this impacts everybody. And it certainly impacts people with the lowest incomes the hardest. So you can imagine these are people who have the fewest amount of choices right now.
Well, and CHAPA has been an advocate for affordable and low and moderate income families for decades now. How new is what we're seeing? Can you put this into context a little more?
It's, you know, we, like Chris said, this has been a problem for a long time. I mean, 30 years ago, we were building double the amount of housing that we are today. 30 years ago, our home prices and rents were more on average with the rest of the country. So this has been happening for quite some time, and now it's gotten to the point where we are really behind in the amount of homes that we need, and this is a huge part of the problem.
So, Chris, I want to bring this back to you. You know, a lot of people, Rachel might agree, you know, are going to zero in on these trends that we've been talking about for our region. You know, that estimate that you need to make double the region's median income, which, again, is $181,000 to get a home in Greater Boston. For a lot of people who are trying to buy a house or a condo or even just sort of thinking about buying, I would imagine they can't help but feel kind of discouraged, you know, thinking, can Boston be a place where I can live, raise a family, open a business maybe? So what do you tell them?
It's a really difficult story in the sense that, you know, housing prices are what they are. What Rachel described has been getting worse for 30 years. I think one thing I would tell them is that this is a very strong market. There's a great economy. There's great quality of life here. And so if you buy a home, you will do well in the long run. And so I think for people who are thinking about, should I get into the market now, if it's the right time for you and your family or you as an individual, then I would say do it. But in terms of what do you tell people who can't find a house, I mean, I think you have to have a certain degree of perseverance and grit. But beyond that, I think, you know, if you think bigger, I would say be supportive of policies that will help expand the supply of housing. You know, Massachusetts passed a law that mandates that communities that are access to the MBTA have to zone a minimum of 50 acres in town for higher density housing. And so some of that we think of as multifamily rentals. Some of that can be townhouses that are other options for owning. So I think if you think in the bigger scale, then be supportive of ways in which we can add a greater range of housing types, more affordable housing types, and a broader range of areas and communities across the metro area.
Well, and then also in the bigger picture, is owning a home or a condo something that's still going to be a good investment, quote unquote, something that'll earn money over the long term?
You know, I hate to give financial advice that way, but I would say yes. And I think the key thing, I think, if you're going to buy a home, particularly now, is that make sure that you're going to be someplace you want to stay for 5 to 7 years. My best bet about what's going to happen with housing prices from here is that they're going to flatten out for about 5 years. And they need to flatten out for 5 years because they've outpaced incomes to such a great degree. And as we get through this patch of inflation and this patch of the Fed raising interest rates, those interest rates will come back down and we'll see housing prices start to go up again. And so in the long run, both through just housing prices keeping pace with income growth in real terms, and through the pay down of your mortgage, you will find that you will do well in the Boston area. And the other thing to bear in mind is it's a way to have a hedge against rent inflation. You know, if you buy a home and have a fixed rate mortgage, then your housing cost, that big part of it is fixed for a time. So even if your wealth doesn't grow as much, you're still benefiting from having fixed, stable housing costs.
Rachel, I want to turn to you for a second here. Are you seeing any signs of progress from a policy perspective that maybe gives you hope about the market?
Absolutely. I'm very optimistic. Massachusetts actually has a long history of investing in housing, and we've shown how much we care about people. You know, Massachusetts is the state that ensured marriage equality, health care access, and we can do this too. We have the strongest affordable housing law on the books that requires every community to have affordable housing. And we have a bunch of state programs that invest in affordable housing production. There's local tools like the Community Preservation Act. And more so over the last year, a lot of policies have been put in place. Chris was referring to the new multifamily zoning law. This is huge. We have really, again, we've not built the amount of housing that we need, largely because we don't allow it. And so this actually has communities setting aside those areas where they want to see growth, where they want to see health and vibrancy and to allow for the housing there. In addition, there's a lot of investment being put into homeownership and particularly focused on narrowing the racial homeownership gap. New programs like the Commonwealth Builder, it's building homeownership in communities like Boston and our gateway cities. This is where a lot of people of color are living, and creating homeownership opportunities there where they want to live or their networks are, you know, where making it easy for people to be able to buy where they are is really important, and also opening up opportunities across the state to do so as well.
Well, when we talk about policy, I can't help but think that it does require lawmakers to kind of follow some of the plans that showed up in Chris's report, for example. So what, Chris, this next question is for you. What do we as constituents need to see in our local leaders in Massachusetts coming up?
Well, I think we mainly need to see a recognition of, A, how important housing is to having a vital economy. And so, you know, if we're going to have the workers that we need for all the different types of jobs we have, then we have to have housing that's affordable to them. If we go back to that $181,000 figure, you know, most people, as they go through life, want to own a home at some point. And if we don't have opportunities for people to do that, then we're going to lose people. We're not going to have those workers. We're not going to have those vibrant communities. And so I think local leaders need to recognize that this is what's good for the Commonwealth is to have a broad range of housing choices. And it's not just good for the Commonwealth. It's good for those communities. So if you live in a suburban community and you want to have, you know, the teacher's environment that we talk about, but also the people who work in the coffee shops, people who work in other local businesses need to have places to live to keep those places vibrant, well-functioning communities.
Well, and if we could also talk about new housing construction and how that comes into, you know, the policy perspective here, especially I'm thinking of so much that's gone on in the last 2 years with, supply chain issues and maybe making those systems a little bit easier to manage. So what does new home construction look like?
Well, it goes back to what Rachel was describing, and then we were talking about earlier with those multifamily zones. So we live in a metropolitan area that has been largely built out within 495. Now, there's still some green spaces out there, but it's going to be hard to put in large single-family subdivisions. So what we need to do is take advantage of the land we do have to be able to allow for higher density housing that gives people opportunities to live, to rent, to own homes. So new construction in Boston is going to look higher density than it did in the past. I have my brother-in-law who lives in San Diego. And if you go to San Diego, they have these zero lot line single family houses. He lives in a single family house. It's got a small backyard, but the density per acre is much higher than it is here. So we need to rethink the types of housing that are suitable for our communities in order to allow new construction to provide that supply that we so desperately need.
Okay. And when it comes to affordable housing options, there are a lot of programs through CHAPA that are designed to connect people with affordable options to either rent or own. So, Rachel, can you share some of those pathways with us?
Absolutely. And I think it's important to note that there's multiple strategies that are needed here. Production is key. We won't solve all of our problems with production, but we cannot solve our problems without production. So we need to produce more homes. We need to produce homes across income levels. We need to invest in these homes financially so that they are affordable to people with lower incomes. We also need to preserve the homes that we've got, whether it's public housing, affordable housing, naturally occurring affordable housing, helping people to stay in their neighborhoods. We need to plan for more homes, and ultimately it's all about the people and making sure that people have the choice to live where they want to live. If they want to become homeowners, they should check into all the state programs that are out there. Sites like mymassmortgage.org will help somebody who's getting into homeownership find out about great state-sponsored mortgage products, down payment assistance, and other forms of help.
Great. Well, that is all the time we have for this segment right now. This was Rachel Heller, CEO of CHAPA, the Citizens Housing and Planning Association, and Chris Herbert, Managing Director of the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies, which just released its new report, State of the Nation Housing 2022. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.